Greetings, this is Eric Andelin, Senior Photogrammetry Workflow Specialist with SimActive, and you're listening to episode number 11, Minimizing Costs of Drone Mapping Projects of the Pixels and Points podcast. And with me today, I have Robert Thompson, Geomatics Technologist at Meridian Surveys. Robert, say hi to everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Great, thanks. Robert, give us a little bit of your background, your company, and what you guys are doing.
My background, mostly traditional surveying and mapping. Do a little bit of UAV processing and deliverables on the side. Our company, Meridian Surveys, we're located in Saskatoon, Canada. We have several branch offices throughout Western Canada. We're kind of focused on pipelines, oil and gas, civil construction, municipal and legal surveys.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are using drones, maybe even aircraft as well?
Mostly drones.
Drones. Okay. And so with these drones, mostly fixed wing, multi-rotor?
I think our main workhorse would be DJI Phantom 4.
Okay.
That's been kind of our mainstay for a while. Within the past year, we purchased a Yellow Scan Mapper LiDAR system. Mm-hmm. It's mounted on a DJI M300 RTK unit.
Okay. Okay.
So those are kind of our two main systems.
And then are your projects, again, when you're using the drones for acquisition, are they land development, pipeline work? What typically do you guys do?
Yeah, kind of a little bit of everything. Land development, pipeline work, volume tracking, prelim surveys for engineering, construction, whatever's out there. I mean, there's lots of different applications for drone work. So,
and I'm sure have your own survey crews, you have your own engineering department, you guys do way more than just this. Is that correct?
Yeah. This is kind of a little bit on the side. But,
so drones are a tool in the toolbox.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then, like you said, you just got involved in LiDAR, you got involved in drone-based LiDAR with the DJI system. So that must be opening up things for you guys and also making things a little bit easier.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then in your position, what do you do with the drones? I mean, you do everything from project setup?
Primarily, I get involved after project setup acquisition.
Okay.
I'm kind of more involved in the office side of things, post-processing and deliverables, making topographic maps, producing kind of the final clean deliverable for the client.
So the project will come to you already flown. You've got a boundary file or something like that where, you know, they say, hey, you know, this is what we need X deliverable out of and off to the races.
Yep.
And did he, with the Phantom, did you say that was RTK or no?
Non-RTK. We just, we fly with GCPs and ground checks.
Yep. Okay.
So we're pretty good.
So you've got survey crews involved in what you're doing and many times, you know, on those projects.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Cool. So, and I know you guys also, you know, as a tool in your toolbox on the software side, you have Correlated 3D. You guys work with our software. That's great. And for our users, they understand, or our listeners understand, that Correlated 3D doesn't do everything. Correlated 3D does image-based processing, and it works with LiDAR data. At some point, you're going to take the data from Correlated 3D into another software to maybe extract deliverables. It might be Esri or QGIS or whatever you happen to be working with.
Sure.
Yep. Okay. In this webinar, we're kind of talking about, you know, the typical layout of a project from start to finish, how you go about things. I always need to let everybody know that what we're going to cover is typical drone mapping project costs, cost variations as projects become larger, then workflows in correlated 3D to minimize your man hours, and then finally, the possibility of using multiple PCs to accelerate processing. So we'll cover all those topics. And let's start with typical drone mapping project costs. And every company can be different in how they do this, but let's just consider what is normally involved in this. And the steps involved, usually, you know, you get your call from your customer or your client asking you to fly a specific area, whether that's, you know, again, land development or any kind of pipeline work, which is, you know, corridor type work. So they'll give you a boundary most likely. Someone will do the flight planning, depending on the size of your company. If you're, you know, if you're a one-man shop, you're doing it all. If you're, you know, a arm of an engineering or a survey company, you may be doing portions of it. So, you know, flight planning, mobilization, depends on, like you said, you guys have got offices throughout Canada, correct?
Western Canada.
Okay. So do the, in the event you have, you know, a project that's a decent distance away, are the drones going to be in different offices? Are they going to be sent to different offices? Or how's that
work? We usually try to keep drones in each office, and then we'll mobilize out of those offices.
Right. So you guys have kind of standardized or created drone crews within each office. They all know how to operate kind of the same way so that the product coming in is always the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So you've got your standard operating procedures and they follow those. That goes to the question of mobilization. At some point, mobilization can get unruly. And if your project is 8 hours away, if you don't have a drone closer, you may subcontract that. You may find another way to do the project. What would you typically do?
A lot of times we'll just have to travel that distance.
Yeah. And I would guess a lot of those places are pretty isolated. So
absolutely.
Maybe down here in the States, it's real easy to get an aircraft to go fly something for you if you need it done, because there's you know, hundreds of small mom and pop aerial mapping companies up there.
Northern Canada.
Yeah. It's
pretty remote.
Pretty remote. So your mobilization range is probably much higher than most folks as far as distance. But it's something to be considered. You know, are you mobilizing out and then spending, you know, a week in the field and then coming back? Or are you a company down here in the States where you may mobilize to the project site and then demobilize every day? And, you know, it may take you a week to get the project done, but you have to account for that in your project costs. And then the other thing you got to think of is, you know, how many missions you have to fly. So DJI Phantom 4 flies for about, what, 20, 30 minutes?
25, yeah.
Yep. So as the project gets larger, you've got to fly multiple missions or have multiple drones out there flying at the same time, which means multiple crews. There's always a limit to how comfortable you are in your acquisition and how much you can do in a day. In the old days, you know, when we did aerial photography, your window of acquisition was between 10 a.m. and 2 or 3 p.m., depending on the sun angle. With drones, we've got a little bit more flexibility. They're lower. You can mitigate some of the issues with cloud shadow and things like that, which you couldn't back in the large format days. So that's something to be aware of. What do you think are some of the other challenges when you talk about going out to acquire a project?
A lot of times weather, time constraints. If it's kind of a long linear project, having multiple missions.
I will say that here, I'm based in Florida. We know that, you know, this time of year, as we move from the west to the east coast of Florida, at about 1 o'clock, the clouds start to pop, and then your day is done. Because you're just not going to get anything done. So I would imagine you have something similar to that.
Yeah, especially this time of year, there's not a lot of light in the day. Mm-hmm. So it'll start later, end earlier. So,
mm-hmm. What about, are you starting to do dual collect with, say, the LiDAR unit and imagery?
Yes, we do have, with the YellowScan mapper, we did purchase the camera module, so we'll be able to collect both simultaneously. Right. Let's process it. Yeah.
So that can make things a little bit easier. And even, I guess, up where you're at, probably you're dealing with vegetation that is not deciduous. It's not, the leaves don't fall typically. So you've got to have something to penetrate ground, where the LiDAR, I'm sure, helps a lot.
It varies in areas, but yeah, typically, it's deciduous.
Yep. And then the other steps, project setup, that's basic. But, you know, again, when you're talking about using something like a Phantom, I don't know what, probably you're probably capturing about 40 acres, 50 acres per flight. I don't know what acres are in hectares. Yeah, but not a big area.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
a few hundred square meters.
Yeah. So if you've got a 1,000 square meter project, all of a sudden you've got a lot of flights to capture. So that involves, you know, part of the flight planning. You deal with that in mobilization. You deal with that in missions. Project setup, again, now we're talking about how do we bring all of those images into one place to start working on your project. And the YellowScan, does it have a separate EXIF file for the images, or is it actually being captured in the camera?
There's another software that we use, Postpack.
Okay.
We use to get the trajectories sorted out, and then we write the EXIF to the images.
Right, which would make sense, because Postpack is, you know, that's pulling data from the IMU, so you're getting roll, pitch, and yaw. You're getting very accurate positional information, and then you just sequence that up with the image capture times.
That's right.
And that gives you your EXIF file. So that's a step that people have to consider. The next would be processing. So, you know, you have to determine how long it's going to take to process your data, maybe how many workstations you have available. Maybe your license is busy, or, you know, the licenses you have of your software is currently busy. So you have to, you know, feed that into the production chain, you know, to get work moving. Then editing. No matter what anybody says, you're probably going to want to edit your data. You know, I like to say massage it, make it look good. You know, you could work on the image balance. You could work on your seam lines, all kinds of things like that. And, you know, the interesting thing about drones is that you've got so many small images. So your AT takes longer because it's creating more tie points. Your editing can take longer because you have more seam lines. So these are all things that, you know, back in the large format world that still exists, you know, what you cover with 1,000 images with a drone, you may cover with 5 images with a large format aircraft. So, you know, obviously processing times are longer. Then obviously there's the QA/QC portion. So once you've got it done and you say, I think we're good, we've got some good data, then you've got to get other eyes on it. Just like when you're in college and you're writing that paper, you get eventually numb to what you've written, and you have to have someone else look at it and say, you know, am I coherent here? And I think it's the same way with imagery. Once you've processed it out and you've done your best at it, you tend to want somebody else to take a look at it and just give it an overview and say, yeah, everything looks good. And then from there, you can go about creating your deliverables. You know, and again, out of correlated 3D, you're getting imagery, you're getting a surface, you can generate contours, you can create feature or line work if you want. You've got those options, but in reality, this data is typically going into some kind of software like MicroStation or AutoCAD or something, where the the person using that is probably more comfortable creating contours in that software, and more confident in it, and that's what they're going to do. So
a little bit more control.
Yep. And they may pull in that nice raster surface that you created and decimate the heck out of it and make it just a 10-point grid, which is fine. I mean, that's what they do. You also have now the LiDAR component of it. So when do you bring, if you bring that LiDAR into your processing workflow, whether it's in Correlator 3D or after, you've got to make those considerations. But again, deliverables as far as Correlator 3D ends with a surface, an image, and then possibly a point cloud, for some people a model. And then, you know, those are the things you have to consider. Those are the steps that are involved going from A to B in your drone project. Did I miss anything?
No, I think it covered it well. So,
yep. Then next, let's talk about, you know, how we would estimate man hours. And, you know, again, if you're a single operation shop, it's simple. It's you and what you want to charge to do the project. You know, it's you and what you want to charge versus your competition to keep working. So, you know, that's pretty straightforward and easy. And you know, we've maybe when a lot of us started out or got involved in drones, this is where we started. Then, you know, maybe the next level up would be now you're working for a company, you know, so you're a paid employee and you have to generate X amount of value to the company to remain there and to feed the profit model that they're working off of. So now we're talking about skill levels required in doing what we're doing. So, you know, you've got maybe the drone operator who may be similar to a technician in office, which is actually really good, because if you don't know what you've acquired, what it looks like when somebody's processing it, then you don't necessarily know if you're collecting it properly. So some in-office time helps that person working in the field understand why they're capturing.
We try to do that. We try to train our crews on both ends.
Yeah. Even at a minimum, if they just do a QC in the field, at least they can see what you want to see. So you've got a field person, a technician, somebody in the office that's doing what you're doing, actually churning through the data. Depending on where you're at, what state you're in, you may need professional licensure involved. So in the states, like in Florida, we have to have a licensed surveyor involved. Even though they're not a photogrammetrist, they're a surveyor, and they sign off on everything. Companies have liability. You have to sign off on that kind of stuff. I would imagine you guys have similar.
Yeah, at a very high level.
Yep. So, you know, they're going to dip their fingers into your project because they have to be billable too. You know, they're going to look at your project and they're going to touch it and they're going to make sure that what you do meets the quality standards that the company, you know, espouses. So you've got that. And then you also have field crews. So again, if you're a small company, maybe it's just you. But if you're a larger company or if you're working on larger projects, you're going to need more than one person out there with the drone. You're going to have somebody flying it, somebody observing it, somebody assisting in takeoff and landing, you know, swapping out batteries, setting up the next project. Your field crew might also be a crew of surveyors. So while the drone's out there flying, somebody's out there with a rover picking up, you know, elevations.
Pretty common, yeah.
You know, again, that's now you've got basically three levels of charges to your project. You've got a technician, you've got field crews, and you've got a professional somewhere there involved. So those are all things to think of. And then each one of them has their own skill level. And you also have to consider, you know, some of the ancillary costs, like your mobilization. You know, it may only cost you, may only take 5 hours to fly a project, but it may take you 3 hours to get there and 3 hours to get home. it may take you a week to get there and a week to get home. So, you know, those costs have got to come somewhere. So when you're setting up your project for someone, you've got to consider that. And we talked about the other things are, you know, how do you determine your cost? Well, obviously it's man hours plus the processing time, and then maybe, you know, resource availability. So, you know, is that workstation available? You know, can we complete the project in the amount of time that we estimated that we could do it? So you've got to consider those things. There's another thing called overhead, which again, if you're a little company, you don't have to deal with that. If you're a large company, you've got multipliers and overhead and all kinds of things to consider. So, you know, and that just goes to, I have an employee and I pay him X dollars, but on top of that, I have to pay for insurance. On top of that, I have to pay for the computer he works on and the survey vehicle that he drives. And as a whole, marketing, legal, all that, as a whole, there's a multiplier to your base pay that you've got to consider. So again, mom and pop, not so much, but if you're a bigger company, that's what you got to do.
Absolutely.
Can you think of anything else I missed there?
No, I think you covered it great.
Okay. So let's talk about the next thing, which is cost variations as projects become larger. So obviously one complete project, one complete mission is the best way to go. You know, so, you know, if it's small enough and you can capture it in one flight and you can process it all as one data set, that's where you're going to reach maximum efficiency. So you have to consider, if that's the case, is the drone I'm flying appropriate for the majority of my work? Or can I develop a workflow that minimizes the fact that I have to do this over multiple missions? So those are the two things to consider. When you work with subsets, it does create inefficiencies, only because you may have overlap that you're doing redundant processing of. It may require you to put more control out just to hold the whole project together. It may require you to basically create 3/4 of a project and then merge them all together into one.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
And those can all create additional editing. So if, you know, just for consideration, if you have, you know, 100 images in one flight and you create seam lines of those 100 images and you correct all those, and you have another flight right next to that and it's got overlap and you create seam lines of those, put all those together, then you put those two back together. Now you've got another seam line that you're going to have to create.
Yeah. You know, there's also a little bit of color balancing variations between the two data sets.
Absolutely. And I'll make the comment that, you know, Correlator 3D, and I would assume all other software, when you complete one area, it's color balanced that one area.
Yep.
If you then bring in another tile next to it and there's overlap, that one may have been color balanced too, but the radiometric balance or situation was captured. If this one was captured at 10 a.m. and this one was captured at 3 p.m.,
yep,
you're just naturally going to have some color balancing. Now you're going to do, which you may have to do in Photoshop or something else, you know, which just, you know, again, creates an extra step. So while I'm talking about this, can you think of any situations where, you know, or additional steps that might be required because of something like that? And like I said, the one to me that sticks out is maybe survey.
Yeah. Adding more control.
Because when you have those, let's just say multiple flight lines where they have overlap, you really want control in that overlap.
Yeah.
You know, so that can become a challenge.
Yeah. We have learned that has caused some issues in the past. So
Yeah. You got a little bit of an advantage though, because you can use the LiDAR system, and granted it still has to fly multiple missions and you still have to run POSPAC on all those, but you can create a coherent surface from that LiDAR mission, which you could then use to control the imagery.
Yeah.
That's good. At least in Correlator 3D, we can do that. Let me get into the next section. So, but again, all of those impact, you know, your project timeline, how much effort's going to be involved, how much man hours, so all those things. So I wanted to talk a little bit about workflows in Correlator 3D and minimize man hours. And one of the nice things is unlimited images. So when in, I know, big projects, what big projects have you done?
Some of our larger ones, maybe 10,000 to 15,000.
Yeah, so that's...
So not massive, but we definitely couldn't do it in other software. That's...
Yeah.
You'd have to split it up and it'd be a lot more work.
Yeah.
A lot of repetitive steps.
So, yeah, let me back up for a minute. So you're capturing imagery with the Phantom, and yes, you have to do multiple missions to get those 15,000 images. Lots of them. But you can take all of those images and dump them into one project in Correlator 3D, and you're good to go. Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. So in 10 to 15,000 images is, you know, that's a pretty big project. How much do you guys work at all with the scripting functions?
I've touched on it a little bit. I think the majority of our projects are small enough where we could rip through them fairly quickly. But for the odd time where we've had, you know, 10,000 to 15,000 image project, yeah, I would use it.
Yep.
Get the AT set up first, and then do the scripting after.
Right, exactly. So you could do the AT and then turn around and script it to just go through each series of images and create the outputs that you want. You know, that's really nice. And even as the project's bigger and bigger and bigger, you could script it to work. Again, all the images come in together, but you could script it out into blocks where you don't have to deal with overlap, but you could say tile it such that when it comes time to do your break lines, or not, sorry, your seam lines, one person may be working on one block and another person could be working on another block without interfering with each other and still working out of the same data set. So that would be kind of a cool way to move through data faster. And then bringing your LiDAR in as part of the project. So where are you guys in that iteration of your processing?
We'll usually create the DEM in the YellowScan Cloud Station software, get that all post-processed, and then push that over to Correlator, use the DEM to do the AT.
Yeah, because AT still takes its time, but if you've got an existing DEM, and it's a good one, that's a big chunk of processing time in Correlator 3D, and if you can eliminate that, you know, that's going to move things along faster for you.
Yep.
And
even the DSM creation too.
Yep. So that's something to consider. Now in our software, if you wanted to, once you've created that point cloud in YellowScan and you've produced that, you could always just bring the point cloud to Correlator 3D. It would immediately convert it over to a DEM, and it would create a raster image as well.
Yep.
And the raster image comes from the intensity. The higher the quality of the LiDAR system, the better refined intensity. The more points you get closer to the ground, the more dense that intensity image is going to be. And in a lot of cases, you can, again, use that to pick control points for the AT. So something like that is very valuable. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is our ability to use distributed processing. So when you've got a big project, it really comes down to the amount of power you could, or the amount of crunch time that your machines can do. We are graphics card based, and we create a very efficient processing workflow as far as pushing the images through the bus to the graphics card to run all the steps. Are you guys working at all with distributed processing?
Not as of yet, but I mean, if we begin to tackle on more 15,000 to 20,000 image projects, yeah, I could see that being valuable.
I can only imagine, you know, how fun that project was. Those first large projects were, you get with somebody breathing down your neck saying, "When's this going to get done?"
a lot of cursing and
We added a feature, and I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but the email notifications.
I have noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice when you're not away.
Yes.
When you're not in front of the computer. Yeah.
Yeah. Because when you're crunching a project of that size, you know, you're going to walk away for a while. You know, it might be a day, it might be a night, it might be 3 nights. And it's sure nice to know, when
text messages.
Yeah. When it gets done processing. So, definitely check that out. And, I've shown people how you can just have that email go straight to your text on your phone and then you just get a text.
That's nice.
So that's a great, option as well. Do you have, any other comments on some of the projects you've done or thoughts on, you know, where we should go with Correlator 3D as we're moving forward?
I think for me, you know, I really see the value of taking on a large volume of projects. It might not be 15, 20,000, but smaller, but you might have 10 of them a day or something like that. So being able to rip through those efficiently, and when the client is breathing down your neck, it's really allowed me to do my job and keep them happy.
Very good. You mentioned that you guys do some volumes. I would assume it's the same site or same sites.
It kind of varies depending on the project. Like some projects, we'll be revisiting the same site, and then others it'll be kind of along the long linear corridor. So in different areas. So
I was going to mention that is a great place to use scripting. You know, basically duplicate the workflow that you did the previous time. We'll save
that time to create the boundaries for the stockpiles.
Yep. So something to consider. There's I tell this to people all the time. There's a lot of things you can do in Correlator 3D that you don't think about. You know, like doing surface to surface comparison. So just before you create that volume report, you can just look at this year's surface versus last year's surface and say, hey, as a sanity check, does everything look right before I go out and create the volumes and things like that?
So sure.
There's some neat tools in there. To the listener, I would strongly encourage you to go to our website and view the webinar that accompanies this podcast. In there, we kind of wrap this all up with a project example where we cover all of the tasks, we cover the rates for the personnel who are being assigned to the tasks, and then we calculate out the amount of time it's going to take to do this project, as well as the pricing for this project if it were done as a whole in Correlator 3D versus if it were done and had to be broken up in tiles because the software you're using cannot accommodate such a large data set. And there you will see the difference and what value we can add when we process it as one whole data set versus a bunch of separate little data sets to be then later merged back in. Well, I'd like to thank Robert for joining us. I'd also like to thank you, the listener, for joining us as well. This podcast was created in conjunction with a webinar. You can access that webinar as well as previous webinars and podcasts by going to our website, simactive.com, where they can be found under the Learning tab. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast through many of the popular podcast subscription sites. Once again, thanks for joining us. Until next time.